Coming up on New York Now, Amazon pulls out of their plan to build their second headquarters in New York City.
It's going to be full-blown war. I mean, the governor is really, really angry. And even the Democrats, I think they were taken by surprise by what happened.
New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio comes to the Capitol.
I urge you to consider all options, but what's most important is that we come up with sustainable revenue to fix the MTA once and for all.
And victims of sexual harassment share their stories to lawmakers in Albany.
About a week after I started in my new position, Vito began to regularly make inappropriate comments about my body, appearance, and how I dress. He instructed me to wear more revealing clothing to make him happy.
It's next on New York Now, right here on PBS.
Funding for New York Now is provided by WNET. Additional funding provided by the Leo Cox Beach Philanthropic Foundation. Winner of a New York State Emmy for Best Political Program, this is New York Now.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to New York Now. I'm Matt Ryan.
And I'm Casey Seiler from the Times Union. A harrowing day-long hearing looks at the problem of sexual harassment, including at the Capitol.
We'll also discuss the continuing political fallout from the Amazon decision at the Reporters Roundtable. First, a look at a busy week at the state Capitol. Governor Cuomo traveled down to Washington this week to meet with President Donald Trump over the provision in the newer tax law that caps the deduction of state and local taxes, commonly referred to as SALT, at $10,000. It's an issue he's been harping on for over a year, and he expressed his frustration to the president on Tuesday. He discussed the meeting the following day in New York City.
It hurts New York, the Northeast, Massachusetts, Connecticut, and it hurts California. Where are your economic engines? New York and California. The economy is, the president's all about grow the economy, grow the economy, grow the economy. Where is it growing? New York and California. So take a spike and put it right in the gears of the economic engines that are delivering for you. We went through this with the president. He had previously said in the press that he was open to discussions. He said once again, that he was open to discussions, that there have to be changes to the tax bill. And if there have to be changes to the tax bill, he would like to see an overall package, an overall transaction that we could work out, because he recognized the issue. And he said that he has been hearing about the issue. Lawrence Kudlow was in the meeting. He's the chief economic advisor. And we said that we would follow up. He knows New York, Mr. Kudlow. And we went through the numbers, and we will be having those follow-up meetings. In the meantime, I'm going to be starting a nationwide campaign to make sure people understand this. It's complicated. It's detailed. It's also devastating. I've spoken to Governor Baker in Massachusetts. I've spoken to Governor Newsom in California. I'm going to be speaking to all the governors. I'm the policy chairperson of something called the Democratic Governors Association. I want to get it on their radar screen.
This week's Siena College poll brought some bad news for the governor. It showed his favorability number at 43%. The lowest he's had since taking office in 2011. Cuomo was asked Monday if it concerned him at all.
I haven't studied it, but one of the people who looked at it from my office said they probably polled the Republican caucus, I think, because they have all the Democrats down and President Trump went up, which, that's a shock.
Do you think it's a reaction to some of the things you have up on the screen here?
They are all positive, the things on the screen here. Reproductive rights is supported by about 70% of the people of New York. The red flag bill, same. Child Victims Act, same. So, no. And what Donald Trump could have possibly What interpretation you could have that would suggest over the past few weeks he has done things to increase your opinion of him, I have no idea.
In other news, New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio testified in front of lawmakers Monday in what is called the annual Tin Cup Day, where big city mayors ask for more money from the proposed state budget. Here, de Blasio addresses one of the most pressing problems for downstate residents, the troubled Metropolitan Transportation Authority, and how to pay for much-needed repairs and improvements.
New York City residents agree it is time to fix the state-run Metropolitan Transportation Authority, and it needs to be this year in this budget, I strongly believe. Now, we know we all would like to see a clear accounting of MTA capital expenditures and what money they need when, but in the meantime, we also know that tens of billions of dollars will be needed on a sustainable basis. This is the moment to achieve that. Obviously, I support the millionaire's tax, but I know there are other solutions that have been put forward. I urge you to consider all options, but what's most important is that we come up with sustainable revenue to fix the MTA once and for all. I must make clear that that revenue cannot be gathered from the city budget directly. City government should not fund a state responsibility, and we simply can't. The impact on our capital budget would be devastating, potentially damaging our credit rating, and imperiling basic infrastructure like schools, parks, roads and bridges, water and sewer, that our constituents, all of your constituents, depend on. This is where our capital money is going, and if we had to pay MTA expenses, we could not make these investments.
Also this week, Assemblyman Dick Gottfried and Senator Gustavo Rivera introduced a revised single-payer health care system bill. It was amended to include long-term care and support services. The lawmakers were joined by people with disabilities, home care workers, and seniors. The bill does not have the current support of Andrew Cuomo, who has questioned whether the state can afford it. A Rand Corporation study last year estimated the state would have to spend around $139 billion to make the transition to single payer. Groups like Unshackle Upstate have criticized the bill, calling it unaffordable.
Assemblyman Unshackle Upstate came out with a response as soon as the press conference started here. Says the latest version of New York's single-payer scheme hits overburdened taxpayers with an additional $43 billion. This proposal will impose more than $250 billion in new taxes. That's not just irresponsible, it's malpractice. How do you respond to that?
That word, malpractice, keeps bumping around.
Well, okay. First of all, you know, they're making up numbers. No thoughtful observer who has studied this topic agrees with those wacky numbers. They just make them up. Secondly, people who know how to analyze health policy issues, both in here in New York and in studies across the country and nationally, all agree that moving to a single-payer system will actually save New Yorkers, save Americans, billions and billions of dollars that are today going to waste.
The fact is, we have to change our mentality. We have to change how we think about this. And it is easy to using wacky numbers to scare people. The reality is that the system, not 250, the system is already expensive, and it does not give us good results. If we add up everything that is being spent right now, Medicare, Medicaid, public, private insurance, co-pays, premiums, et cetera, the system is already expensive. And when the choice is being made about what kind of care do you have by your health insurance company and not by your doctor and you as a patient, that's a problem.
They call the numbers wacky. I don't know where they're coming up with them. What is your response to that?
Yeah, I mean, I think the reality is that this legislation is a $200 billion tax increase on New York State residents. Now this new revised proposal actually includes another $43 billion in taxes. And those are independent studies that have suggested these numbers. So it's not certainly our organization that's coming up with the data. The reality is New York State residents are already significantly overtaxed. We lead the nation in out-migration. Imposing the single largest tax increase in New York State history isn't going to make that problem go away. So we believe fundamentally that we should all be working towards a universal coverage effort to try to make sure that we're providing access to care to as many New Yorkers as possible without imposing a massive tax increase on New York State residents.
Also happening this week was the long-awaited sexual harassment hearing at the Capitol, the first of its kind in over 25 years. Testimony included the commissioner from the Department of Labor, the head of the Joint Commission on Public Ethics, and a number of survivors.
You could hear a pin drop in the large hearing room as they shared their stories.
He literally loomed over me. I did not know when I took the job that he was also a serial sexual harasser who had preyed on young women for years.
Assemblymember Lopez told me that if I wanted to be good at my job, I had to wear high heels and miniskirts.
Eventually, he pressured me into massaging his hand while he drove, subjected me to unwelcome touching, and questioned my sexuality whenever I thwarted his advances.
I had told the assemblymember to stop hitting on me. His response was retaliatory, to cut off all communication with me, including the communication we needed so that I could perform my job.
When I finally came forward to file a complaint on behalf of myself and three of my staff, I was a shell of my former self, both physically and emotionally. I was severely traumatized and suffered from regular panic attacks and suicidal thoughts. I had lost weight, and all my hair was falling out. Despite multiple conversations with the Speaker's office and recorded evidence, the Assembly did not investigate my claims.
A high-power elected official forced his tongue into my mouth.
His abuse largely consisted of yelling and berating, although he frequently threw objects and swiped desks clear of their contents. He once slammed his fist into a wall next to my face, causing pictures to fall and leaving a mark that I eventually had to get painted over.
When we in the sexual harassment working group first learned that the legislature would finally hold public hearings, a longtime friend of mine who was in Albany when I was raped by former Speaker Silver's chief counsel, Michael Boxley, he asked me, "How do you feel?" And I found my answer to that quite complicated. Today, I'll describe how I was treated by the Assembly when I reported what happened. My first interview with the counsel to the majority, Bill Collins, was interrupted three times by phone calls from Speaker Silver. Mr. Boxley and Mr. Silver were privy to all information throughout the process and the investigation and controlled it, and Mr. Silver controlled its outcome. Their concern was not in investigating my story, but in containing its fallout. I was 24 years old, traumatized, not able to eat or sleep, and learned that my assault didn't matter to the people who make laws for the state.
About a week after I started in my new position, Vito began to regularly make inappropriate comments about my body, appearance, and how I dress. He instructed me to wear more revealing clothing to make him happy.
A search history I can't escape. It hurts my job positions. It hurts my personal relationships. Everyone who reads online what the media has written about me, it's portrayed that I have done something wrong or that it's a joke. The UK Daily Mail, all these tabloids, that it's just a joke. And that's something that absolutely needs to change.
Lopez's harassment was a daily occurrence and escalated quickly during my time in his office, directing I and other female workers to dress in heels, short skirts, and in one instance, nothing but that scarf.
I changed. I often cringe when an elevator door opens. In my own home, family and friends do not enter the room without warning. Coworkers learn not to say hello from behind me because I jump, sometimes loudly, and people spill their coffee because I startle so easily.
Following my assault, I began to think about the options that lay before me. I could report the senator, pretend he never forced his tongue in my mouth and go about my job, try and find a new position in another office, or leave Albany altogether. But I knew what the reporting process was like. I'd seen it play out for colleagues in my less than 2 years as a Senate staffer. And I had read and heard enough stories, including those of Leah, Rita, and Elizabeth, to know that reporting was futile. Who would believe me over a powerful man like Klein? I chose to leave state government without reporting what happened.
All right, and now for analysis of the week's two big stories and more, I'm happy to be joined at the Reporters' Roundtable by Rachel Silberstein from my own paper, The Times Union, of course, my partner, Matt Ryan, and making what might be his final roundtable appearance as a journalist, Ken Lovett, Bureau Chief of the Daily News. All right, two quotes to start us off on the Amazon story. This from the huge online retailer: a number of state and local politicians have made it clear that they oppose our presence and will not work with us to build the type of relationships that are required. And this from Governor Cuomo: a small group of politicians put their own narrow political interests above their community. The New York State Senate has done tremendous damage. They should be held accountable for this lost economic opportunity. What is this year's budget negotiation going to be like?
That last quote, if that was a Republican governor talking about the Senate Democrats, you'd be like, okay. But wow, you know, it's going to be ugly. It was already starting to turn. There's been a lot of tension since the Democrats took over. You know, they got a lot done early on, but kind of without the governor, and there's been a lot of jockeying, but now it's going to be full-blown war. I mean, the governor is really, really angry. And even the Democrats, I think they were taken by surprise by what happened. I don't think they expected that. So it's going to be interesting moving forward.
Even opponents of the Amazon deal, it's not like they wanted to scrap the entire deal. They just wanted to negotiate, or they claimed they wanted to negotiate a better deal in terms of what they contribute to the community.
And we've seen who's been taking the hits. Mike Gianaris, a longtime Astoria senator, he got the wood. The back pages on Friday, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, Andrea Stewart-Cousins. These are people who have had nothing but, you know, feel-good stories for the most part for the first 2 months of 2019. So it's interesting. And also, Cuomo hasn't gotten a ton, as you might expect, of criticism. In fact, his arch nemesis, Steve McLaughlin, former assemblyman, who's now the Rensselaer County executive, says, I'm with Andrew Cuomo on this one. They should blame the Senate Democrats.
And this was a huge thing, a huge loss for the governor and for de Blasio. De Blasio, for the first time, gets behind a corporation and it blows up in his face, because usually he would have been on the side fighting Amazon. But for the governor, for me, I haven't seen a project this high profile go down in flames like this since the state killed Mayor Mike Bloomberg, who was mayor at the time of New York City, his bid for a West Side Stadium.
Mm. Mike Bloomberg, who opposed the scope of the deal that would have brought Amazon here. Mayor de Blasio said, hey, Amazon never wanted to deal with us. And an interesting question: on Tuesday, a Siena poll was released that found an overwhelming majority, like almost 80% of New Yorkers, supported the deal. Why would Amazon pull out less than 48 hours after a poll like that came out, which enabled, of course, the Cuomo administration to argue, see, this is something that has broad-based support?
I think they were worried about the appointment of Mike Gianaris on this board, the PACB, the Public Authorities
Control Board, yeah,
which would have had some say over the project. And the Senate Dems nominated him. Some think with the idea that he would be rejected by the governor, and then for his own local politics, he could be able to say, I tried. But the governor didn't take action on that. And I think Amazon just looked at the next 2 years and said, why do we need to put up with this? We're just going to be pounded on. And, you know, it is fair to say Amazon made a lot of mistakes. They talked about, you know, they're not going to support unions at all, which in New York is a really bad position to take.
Especially with the governor.
But on the other hand, and even the governor, you could see things were starting to sour. The governor at one point about a week or two ago started to distance himself a little bit, where he kept saying, Amazon hasn't sold this project enough. It hasn't done a good enough job selling it. But on the other hand, you had guys like Gianaris who refused to meet with Amazon. So it was a little disingenuous when he says, oh, we see what kind of partners they would have been by pulling out this way, when you refused to meet with them in the first place.
You know, I think another good question to ask is, you know, did New York, did the state officials, Andrew Cuomo, Bill de Blasio and others, you know, take the news last Friday seriously enough that they were thinking about pulling out? Howard Zemsky, who's the economic czar here in New York under Cuomo, admitted Tuesday in testimony at the economic development hearing in Albany that he hadn't talked to them since Friday, which I thought was pretty surprising.
I think you also have to ask, do they bring enough value to New York City? It's not like New York City is desperate for high-paying tech jobs, you know? For the burden, what New York needs is housing and better subways. And I think they were offering to, like, give tech classes in local public schools and hire a neighboring NYCHA building. But they should have you know, any other city in New York State would have welcomed them with open arms.
And this all comes down to Ocasio-Cortez. Her election, her surprise primary victory over Joe Crowley really changed the political dynamics down there. So Mike Gianaris, who signed a letter welcoming, said, hey, come on, Amazon, come to New York, he, all of a sudden, when Crowley lost, who he was close with,
he converted pretty quickly.
He converted pretty quickly and became much more progressive.
I want to turn attention now to this week's other big story, which was Wednesday's sexual harassment joint legislative hearings. Rachel, you were there pretty much for the whole thing, and it went on for, what, more than 11 hours?
Yeah.
And what were the big takeaways in terms of what the hearings revealed about how the state fails to deal with the problem?
There were a lot of takeaways, but I think the most dramatic testimony came, of course, from the victims. There were eight people there, you know, seven women and one male victim, an aide. And they really revealed about, you know, each of them repeated a similar account of reporting behavior by their boss, often an elected official, in one case, a staff member. The leadership, especially in the assembly, sort of defended that politician and told them, compelled them or pressured them to sign a non-disclosure agreement. Right. So I think Wednesday's hearing was very much a catharsis for them. And it really was a very remarkable moment in the legislature. You saw lawmakers who were there during the scandals of Vito Lopez and Micah
Kellner and over and over again, including back to Michael Boxley, who is a top aide to Sheldon
Silver.
Well,
that's what struck me and really was amazing to hear so many of these lawmakers, some in tears, and saying, we hear you, we see you, we apologize. And it really struck me because when the whole Boxley thing happened with a legislative aide named Elizabeth Crothers, you know, the story that came out at the time was when she was recounting what happened, she accused Boxley, who was a top aide to Shelley Silver, of raping her. And as she, you know, gave her accounting of what happened to the speaker at the time, he sat there eating pretzels.
Yeah, it was
so callous.
Yeah.
And so to then flash ahead, way too long, 20 year, whatever it was, to now see the lawmakers responding and reacting. As you said, it had to be a catharsis.
Yeah, Shelley Silver looked really bad coming out of that. As the story that Ken just told, Elizabeth Crothers told some other ones where he said that, you know, I've got to protect the institution. One of the times where she was talking to his top lawyer, Shelley Silver called him and, you know, the meeting was interrupted three different times. So he's looked bad for a long time now, but it got worse yesterday.
And I think it was twofold. So they got to confront these lawmakers who were part of a body that silenced them and didn't listen to their complaints. And also, J-COPE, which is tasked with investigating, I think 7 out of 8 of them were investigated had their incidents investigated by J-COPE. They were interrogated and put in the hot seat. And lawmakers didn't give them an easy time. They really grilled them about J-COPE's process and its secretiveness and the lack of results.
Seth Agata, who was the executive director of J-COPE, a former Cuomo counsel, said, hey, yeah, well, we really can't do much about discussing our investigations, but we'd like to be able to be more transparent.
And yet they've done very little to push for that.
Yeah.
Where has J-COPE, you know, when you ask them, they'll say that, but where have they been? Where have they put forward anything? Have they argued for it? Even if they did it token-wise and said, here's legislation we think could be good, have they fought for it? Have they done anything to open up the process?
The governor talked about putting out proposals to reform J-COPE. Have we seen those yet?
There's been not an area one, so.
Yeah. A couple of other things that came up that, Rachel, you discussed, the idea of kind of closing ranks behind the lawmakers accused as opposed to the victims, secret investigations, patchwork enforcement as well. The commissioner of the Department of Labor seemed kind of unsure on who is responsible for kind of enforcing in the private sector, and also the weaponized media, which was mentioned by a couple of victims as well.
Yes, in several instances, as soon as, you know, someone complained about it, the official would immediately go to the media and smear them. And the victims said that they had, you know, tabloid media camped outside their house or were portraying sort of their traumatic incident as sort of a sex scandal, the salacious gossip. So it's been to them, sort of the media fallout was re-traumatizing.
All right. And now for a far lighter subject, and that is the fact that Ken Lovett is not only leaving the Daily News, but leaving journalism as well. Ken, where are you going?
I am going to a consulting firm, Metropolitan Public Strategies. They have clients in both political, corporate, and nonprofit in both New York and Florida. And so it's going to be new.
Without a doubt. You have been, I think, with the exception of Karen DeWitt of New York State Public Radio, and of course Matt and I, been just about the most regular guest on this roundtable. Your commentary has always been incisive, tough, and thoughtful, and we appreciate your coming in for free on Friday mornings.
I appreciate
it. And we've heard it over the years from viewers, you know, that they value Ken's input. You know, it doesn't matter if you're talking to someone on Long Island or the North Country, that your analysis has been valuable. We do want to give you a little token of our appreciation here. Brian, if you can get a shot of this, a little mug you can take home to yourself and your daughters, and
a little shot of Ken
in his element at a press conference.
That's right, ladies and gentlemen. Ken Lovett worked for decades in New York State political journalism.
All I got is this lousy
mug. All right. That is the best send-off anybody can get. All right. That is all the time we have this week for New York Now. Please tune again next week. Thanks very much for watching.